Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Mike Green. My guest is Olivia Campbell, author of the new book, Sisters in Science, How Four Women Physicists Escaped Nazi Germany and Made Scientific History. Olivia tells the story of four first-generation women physicists who were forced to flee Nazi Germany due to their Jewish heritage. Her style of storytelling, which reads like a made-for-movie book, reveals how the sisterhood between these four women helped them navigate perilous escapes and continue their groundbreaking research in new countries, ultimately revolutionizing the field of physics, even leading to a Nobel Prize, but not for them. Olivia, welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you so much for having me. It's my pleasure to be here.
Well, let's start with learning more about you. Tell me about your background. How'd you grow up, and what interested you in becoming a writer?
Oh, goodness. Let's see. For a long time, I was a dancer. I grew up in the Shenandoah Valley in Virginia. I took horseback riding lessons and dance classes, and I also wrote Nancy Drew-like mysteries. So a lot of varied interests in arts and culture when I was younger. I planned to be a dancer. I went to school to be a ballet dancer for many years. My first year at university, I broke my foot. So I decided to switch to a type of job, a profession that was maybe a little more or a little less dependent on my body, maybe a little more stable. I'm not sure journalism is that thing right now anymore, but at the time it seemed like a good idea. So I started going into arts journalism. Since I already knew all about dance, I covered art gallery openings and theater performances. It was great fun. And then at the very last year of my college career, I got pregnant. It was unexpected, and I had a very difficult pregnancy, difficult birth, and terrible postpartum depression. So I decided that that experience made me want to switch entirely my topic of coverage for my writing, and I became a women's health journalist, writing about parenting and women's health and everything adjacent to that, reproduction, all kinds of things, mental health. And that segued me into just sort of writing more generally about science. I went back to school and got a science writing master's degree at Johns Hopkins. And then an agent contacted me about writing a book.
So you wrote about your personal experience before you wrote about science.
Yes. I felt like I was very unprepared and by what I experienced with my first pregnancy. And I felt like it was something I wanted to help other women feel more like they were more prepared to sort of give them the information they needed that I feel like I wasn't privy to at the time.
Did you find that therapeutic?
Definitely. Yes. I definitely wrote through the trauma of that experience for sure.
Before you wrote the book, Sisters in Science, you authored another book titled Women in White Coats. What inspired you to write that book and then this one?
Oh, goodness. Let me think. I didn't have a book idea first. My agent came to me after she read an essay I wrote on Literary Hub. And she said, develop some ideas. Just go poking around and come up with a few different, you know, short form ideas, and we'll talk them through. So I went out looking for ideas, and this was, the Woman in White Coats was just one of the ideas I was poking around at. And she said, you know, find that topic that is not going to make you bored, that you're not going to get sick of it. You know, you're into it because you're going to be doing this research and writing of this book for several years. So I wanted to go with the story of some of the first women physicians and how they had to put aside their differences in order to found a women's college to study medicine.
And what inspired you to write this book?
This book was, I read an article in Smithsonian Magazine about academics just more generally escaping Nazism. And that led me to a research project at Northeastern University that had a huge database of information about women academics specifically who were trying to escape Nazi Germany, and whether they were successful when they applied for grants and how that affected their ability to escape. So I'm digging around all the names in there, and I find the three H ladies, the three H names, and to find they're all physicists. They all specialize in spectroscopy. And then we add Lise Meitner in to the fold, who is the much more well-known of these four women. And they all knew each other, helped each other, worked together either before or after, the whole Nazi experience and, the stories of their escape and helping each other. It was just an incredible story. So I couldn't wait to tell it.
My guest is Olivia Campbell, author of the new book, Sisters in Science, How Four Women Physicists Escaped Nazi Germany and Made Scientific History. So, Olivia, you wrote an extraordinary book, and I'd like for you to read some excerpts from your introduction just to set the stage for the rest of our discussion.
Sure, of course. David Hilbert could solve some of the most complex mathematical equations ever conjured, but he simply couldn't wrap his head around the views of his fellow faculty members. In the spring of 1915, Professor Hilbert attempted to recruit a former student to teach alongside him at the University of Göttingen in Germany. This person had been teaching math for 7 years at the University of Erlangen, but Hilbert coveted their brilliance for his own department, and brilliant they were. The mathematician would go on to create modern algebra as we know it. Fellow Jewish academic Albert Einstein would come to refer to them as the most significant creative mathematical genius. If Einstein is calling you a genius, you know it must be true. But some of Göttingen's professors didn't care how brilliant this potential addition to their university was. All that mattered was that Emmy Noether was a woman, and that meant she couldn't be a university lecturer. Hilbert was livid. He knew Noether's astonishing mathematical mind could be nothing but a great gift to the students of Göttingen. I do not see that the sex of the candidate is an argument against her admission as privadocent, which means lecturer, he fumed in response. After all, we are a university, not a bathhouse. A similarly incensed Einstein offered to intercede on her behalf. In the end, he didn't need to. Hilbert hired her anyway, under the auspices of being his assistant. She even began giving lectures, although her work went unpaid, of course. Within a few years, Noether showed the world just how well she'd mastered her craft. In 1918, she solved the mathematical problem presented by Einstein's new theory of relativity that even the man himself hadn't been able to puzzle out. Her theorem was pivotal to the development of modern physics and forever altered her conception of the universe. Surely this would prove she was good enough to be a professor. Finally, in 1919, Noether became the first woman in Germany allowed to achieve habilitation, the official certification required to teach at the university level. To mark the occasion, the stuffy Göttingen faculty conceded, "A woman's mind is capable of being creative in mathematics, only in exceptional cases." While Noether paved the way for women mathematicians in Germany, Lise Meitner, Hedwig Cohn, Hertus Bohner, and Hildegard Stücklen were among those who helped usher in what was essentially the first generation of women physicists. Tragically, their careers were cut short just as they were getting established. When Hitler took power in 1933, he ruthlessly stomped all over this progress by enacting policies excluding Jewish people and their supporters from civil service employment, and essentially barring women from such work. The Nazis also restricted the number of women who could enroll in universities and forbade women from pursuing certification to teach at universities. Most of the 56 women who'd fought tooth and nail to become lecturers or professors in Germany by the early 1930s lost their positions. Hedwig, Lise, Hertha, and Hildegard all lost their jobs as a result of Nazi policies. As the Nazi empire increased, so did the need for Jewish people and Nazi opponents to find refuge elsewhere. What would it take for Hedwig, Lise, Hertha, and Hildegard to make it out of Hitler's Germany alive? Hope, of course. Persistence, certainly. Well-placed connections never went amiss. Mostly, it would come down to the indefatigable dedication and resources of a vast network of aid workers, acquaintances, and colleagues. The tirelessness of veritable strangers in doing everything in their power to see you safely out of Nazi territory. For organizations tasked with assisting scholars with escape, women invariably took a back seat to men. If they were to make it out, they'd have to help each other.
And that is a perfect setup. Who were these incredible women?
These were among the first women to be allowed into universities. One of the first women to get a PhD in physics in Germany, Hedwig Cohn, she actually started attending university before women were technically allowed in her German state. But she was confident. She was hopeful that that would be very soon that she would be allowed. And she was right. She was proven right. The following year, they were allowed, women were allowed to attend universities across Germany. So she had hope. And she, I think she's one of my favorites of these four women because she's just her spirit. She's the first one to get the PhD, and she's the last one left there of these of women physics professors in Germany. She's the last one left, 1940. It's looking bleak, but her spirit is just still shining. She's still got that little ray of hope, and that just really shone for me. And then she has this incredible journey across, you know, all kinds of different transportation methods and just taking ships and trains and this and that. And she gets all sick during her three-month-long escape. But she arrives in America and she still has that spirit. She's still this incredible, unrelenting, you know, positivity I saw in her was really inspiring. And then we have Herta Spohner, who was sort of, the mother type figure of the group. I'm not sure if that's the right word to use, but she seemed very strongly to that she was in charge of looking out for everyone. She, was the first one to come over to North Carolina, and she made sure that Hedwig had a place to land as soon as possible in North Carolina to come teach a teaching offer. And once Hildegard and Hedwig came over to the U.S., Herta would kind of mentor them and help them with the adjustment, checked in with them regularly, make sure they were doing okay, kind of impressed upon them the importance of publishing papers continuously. Herta was prolific. She published so many scientific papers. It was amazing, both in Germany and in the U.S. So she was very interested in seeing these women sort of thrive, not just survive, in once they moved to America. And she invited them to come to her lab at Duke University for the summers when they weren't teaching at their little colleges because they didn't have those big labs that she had at their institutions. So every summer they would get together and just do research in this giant, you know, purpose-built spectroscopy lab that Herta had. And just the way that they looked out for each other and made sure they were okay, having this very specific experience that very few other people in their lives could have, empathized with or really understood at the same level. And Lise Meitner, of course, the most well-known of all of these women. She is a force to be reckoned with. She's absolutely a genius, nominated for Nobels dozens of times, never won one. She's known as being most famous for winning Otto Hahn, her lab partner, the Nobel Prize. But it was her who discovered nuclear fission. And she instigated that project several years before at her lab in Germany. And her partner, Otto, had been pulled on later on. And so I would say it definitely warranted at least a shared Nobel for that discovery. But it went to Otto.
Yeah, I want to get into that story a little deeper after the break. But we have these four women. And you say of the four women, Lise was the most famous. And Herta was more like the mentor.
Right.
Okay. Well, we need to take a short break. But on the other side, we'll get deeper into this story. My guest is Olivia Campbell, author of the new book, Sisters in Science, How Four Women Physicists Escaped Nazi Germany and Made Scientific History. I'm Mike Green. You're listening to the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of JPR. Welcome back to the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Mike Green. My guest is Olivia Campbell, author of the new book, Sisters in Science, How Four Women Physicists Escaped Nazi Germany and Made Scientific History. So, Olivia, chapter one, you start with the story of Hedwig. Why?
I think it's because she was the first in Germany, the first woman in Germany to get a degree in physics. Like I said, she had started to go to college even before she was really allowed to. She was just auditing classes and kind of biding her time. I really felt like I wanted her story to sort of span the entire book because I think I had probably the most information on her and her life in Germany and then after in America, and most information on her journey over as well. I felt like it was definitely the most cinematic of the escape stories. And just this amount of letters that she was writing and how Lise and Herta were both helping her to escape. Like I could really show all of the pieces of her life. And I felt like I wanted her to be really peppered throughout and have her start and sort of finish her story and span more of the book. she was a very compelling character to me.
So she is the through line.
Right. Yes. I like to think so.
And how did Hedwig eventually escape?
So her visas kept getting canceled. That's what happened to many of these women. I think it happened to Lise too. Lise's Austrian passport was like once the Nazis went to Austria, her passport was no longer valid and she had no passport then. So both of them experienced this visa cancellations. So they would get their hopes up and think everything is settled. And then all of a sudden something happens and they can't, you know, it won't go through. So she, Hedwig is writing constant letters, basically asking anyone she can think of for help. She has a former colleague who's at Princeton University by this point. He left really early in the game here while she's still left behind almost a decade later. So she's writing to Herta. She's writing to her colleague at Princeton. She's writing to all these aid organizations that have popped up specifically to help these refugees from the Nazis and also more specifically scholar refugees, which are much more easily placed in other countries, right? There's more, they can hopefully find jobs for them, hopefully find funding to get them where they need to go to safety. So Hedwig, eventually she gets a visa to enter Sweden, which is where Lise has escaped to. So she goes to, she finally escapes like a few weeks from being sent to a camp and she makes it out just barely. She goes to Sweden and kind of like decompresses a little bit. She hangs out with Lise. Lise shows her this enormous stack of all the letters that she saved from, you know, Lise's part in trying to help Hedwig escape. And it's just like an incredible testament of all, what the lengths that friends and strangers will go to help you to safety. It was quite a moment. And then she has this really long journey on a boat through Russia. She goes through train, and then she goes on a boat from Japan to California. And then she goes on a train from California to Chicago, where she was finally met by James Frank, who was another very big character in the story. He worked with Lise. He is Herta's mentor. And so he's at the University of Chicago at this point.
Well, what's interesting is that Herta and Hildegard, I believe you said she goes by Hildy, Herta and Hildegard weren't Jewish. How did they connect?
No, we have two women who are Jewish and two women who aren't Jewish, and they all lost their jobs. So Hildy is in Switzerland at the time. She gets her degrees in Germany. She goes to school with Herta, and then she goes off to be a professor in Switzerland. Well, when the Nazis come to power and start making all these proclamations, Switzerland starts getting antsy about having immigrants, foreigners, you know, in their side of their borders. And so they start the process of basically firing Hildy, getting rid of her funding or whatever. So she had this connection to a professor at a women's college in the U.S. who had come to Switzerland to study at her school, and they'd met and gotten along really well. So she reaches out to her for help and finds a position at that school. So she is saved relatively quickly. She knows that if she goes back to Germany, she would only be able to get a job like teaching high school level type things, and that's not what she's interested in. There's really no way for a woman to get a university position researching or teaching by this point. So Herta, her boss, James Frank, was acting as her guarantor at her position. So she was a professor and a research assistant for James. And the other people at the university there didn't want her there because she was a woman. But Frank said, no, she is staying. As long as I am employed here, she will have a job. Well, James Frank was Jewish, so he suddenly didn't have a job anymore. So that meant Herta wasn't safe. Now, this was a story that was seen all across Germany. We have women whose bosses were acting as their guarantor, and they were Jewish, and they got fired, and suddenly the woman was out also. So even if they weren't specifically fired by any Nazi rules, they were indirectly losing their jobs because they no longer had protection from all the sexist people at their institutions.
Let's take a pause there. I want to remind the audience, my guest is Olivia Campbell, author of the new book, Sisters in Science, How Four Women Physicists Escaped Nazi Germany and Made Scientific History. Olivia, who was Otto? You're telling us about Frank. Who was Otto?
Otto Hahn?
Yes.
Yes, he was Lise Meitner's longtime collaborator. So he was one of the first people that Lise met when she came to Germany. She's Austrian. She already has her PhD in physics from the University of Vienna. She comes to Germany as a young 20-something, and she starts working with Otto Hahn. He's one of the few people in Berlin who is willing and excited about working with a woman. Well, she's not allowed in the main area of the research lab. They have to work in the basement together. So it's just the two of them in this dingy basement that they've turned into a research place. So they ended up spending a lot of time, just the two of them together. So they formed this really strong partnership professionally. And that lasted for pretty much almost their entire careers, until the Nazis, you know, made sure that Lise was not safe to remain in Germany. They were together up until then. So they both sort of went along the same pathway of being like research assistants and then getting their own areas within an institution. And then being like, he became the head of the KWI research institution in Berlin that she had, was head of the physics area of this Kaiser Wilhelm Institute for Chemistry. He was a chemist. She was a physicist. The interdisciplinary match made in heaven. They could interpret the results, you know, through the lens of chemistry, and she could do it through the lens of physics. They were making incredible findings with their different trainings. It was really fantastic. They discovered an element that was useful in treating cancer that made them a lot of money early in their career. And then, of course, it took about 3 years of this for this project of Lise's to come to fruition for this discovery of nuclear fission. So they spent long days bombarding elements together. But when she was sent away, he had a sort of a victim complex about that. He felt very left behind, betrayed, and she also felt betrayed because he never really understood exactly how dangerous it had been for her to stay. And, you know, he was very happy to take all the glory for the discovery of fission that, yes, it had happened once she had already left. She was still communicating with him via letters and through intermediaries, trying to conduct her own research in Sweden. And then they would share results with each other between Germany and Sweden. So they sort of independently came to this finding, but it was really Otto Hahn's saying, I have this result, I can't interpret it. He gave her that information and she finally interpreted it.
And speaking of that and nuclear fission, tell me about the atomic bomb.
So I love Lisa's stance on this. She was invited into the Manhattan Project, and she said absolutely not. Her nephew, who's a physicist, accepted. He worked on the Manhattan Project. James Franck was working on the Manhattan Project. There, she had plenty of colleagues who were involved. She didn't mind them working on it. That was one thing. But she had been a volunteer nurse at the front in World War I, and she saw firsthand up close what war did. And she, from then on, said, I will not be a party to anything that will cause this type of pain and destruction. And so when they came and said, you know, come to the Manhattan Project, she said, absolutely not. And that was really a huge deal for her to say no. Like, it was big that she would reject something during wartime, reject, you know, giving her talents to the Allied forces. That was kind of a big deal that she chose not to. Like, she even went so far as to say, like, she didn't want her image or her anything about her being used in stories about this. But of course, that wasn't the case. There were all kinds of magazines and news stories saying that she, you know, escaped Germany with a bomb in her purse or something, you know, just really ridiculous sort of portraits of her coming out that were patently untrue. And she tried to fight this idea. And when she eventually heard about the dropping of the bomb, she was pretty devastated. She went on like a 2-hour walk and just like, I don't think she ever really recovered from that. I think she felt like it was really a mistake. And, but I really admire her ability to not chase the renown and the acclaim of being a part of that project in favor of her own moral stance.
Tell me about the Nobel Prize and their role.
So Otto has to come to Sweden to accept the Nobel Prize when the war is over and everything is, you know, starting to get back to normal. They're rebuilding, literally rebuilding from the rubble of, you know, in Berlin. And this whole time, Lise has been trying, like sending letters and letters to Otto, talking to him about how horrible this was for Jewish people and how he will never understand. Like, she's just like shaking him, wanting him to like understand what it was like for a Jewish person to go through this. Of course, she didn't consider herself Jewish. That's an important point. She had converted to Protestantism. She had Jewish heritage, though her grandparents were Jewish. So that meant the Nazis considered her Jewish. She always felt sort of uneasy about being welcomed by the Jewish communities in America and so forth. She was sort of a semi-celebrity at the time after the war, and she did a big tour of the U.S. But when Han came over for the Nobel Prize, it was very awkward. It was very cold. I think a lot of people have ideas that maybe she was overlooked for the Nobel because she was Jewish, maybe because she was a woman, maybe because they weren't really sure where to put her. Was it a Nobel in chemistry? Was it a Nobel in physics? So there's lots of theories about why it is that she never actually was awarded any of those ones she was nominated for. But she was not nominated in concert with Otto for the one thing that she did actually discover. So I think it's a big, big oversight for sure.
Well, we only have about a minute left, and I have a couple of questions, if you can condense them. The network of people needed to escape Nazi Germany meant that only a fraction of those that were trying to get out actually made it out. What are your thoughts about that?
It was very devastating to write the chapter about the women academics and the women scientists who didn't make it out, the women who they were murdered by the Nazis. I felt like it was really important to include, though, because you can't look away from that. You have to see the result. You have to see that not everyone made it out. Yes, these women have a very hopeful, inspiring story, but not everyone had that story. And you can't omit that for the sake of hopefulness. You have to look at all the aspects of this. This was, you know, mass murder. And it was, yes, much easier to get out if you were an academic, but not all the academics did make it out.
What do you want your readers to take away from this extraordinary story?
I'd like to think that the overarching idea is that hate doesn't win, that hope can prevail. I love that these women lived to old age and live to inspire other women scientists to continue their work and be the thing that the Nazis, you know, didn't want them to be, which was a well-educated professor, scientist, thriving and surviving as a Jewish person or as a, you know, someone who loved Jewish people.
Well, unfortunately, we're out of time. But I want to thank you, Olivia, for sharing such an extraordinary story with us.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
My guest was Olivia Campbell, author of the new book, Sisters in Science, How Four Women Physicists Escaped Nazi Germany and Made Scientific History. I'm Mike Green. You're listening to the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of JPR.